Okay, good morning, Rabbi Yisrael. We're going to start the sugya here. Okay, we'll go over the mission again. Hakol memirin, echod anoshim ve'echod noshim. Lo yisho adam rashai lohomir. Elo shem hamir mumor v'sofeg is harboim. So Hakol Mamirim is saying that everybody can do tmura. We'll see if that lashon of can means generally means you're allowed to do tmura. Echad anoshim v'echad noshim, both men and women. But lo yishodem rashay lohamir. The Mishnah almost seems to go back and forth, which is what the Gemara is going to be aiming on. The Mishnah seems to be saying you're allowed to do it, and then the Mishnah is saying you're not allowed to do it. Elo shem hamir mumar v'soifik is harboim. If you do it, you chayiv malchus. So the Gemara is bothered again. So last week we clarified that the din of tmura is really mostly in the intent. And that's not to take away the fact that in most cases, when you do tmura, the facts on the ground are different. When you do tmura, you're dealing with kedushas aguf. And when you do pidyon, you're dealing with Kedushas Domim. So that's for sure normally the difference, factually speaking, between Tmura and Pidyon. But inherently, the difference between doing a permitted act and a prohibited act is not the facts on the ground, and we prove that from the Sugya later, on Daf Chav Zayin. It's the intent. And by Tmura, the intent is to remove, by Pidyon, the intent is to remove the Kedusha from this animal because of whatever issue this animal has. So you have to take the Kedusha off and then do something with it. By Tmura, your intent is to find a replacement because you want to find another animal to bring as a carbon rather than this one. So your intent really is to find a replacement rather than your problem is that you have an issue with this carbon in front of you. In fact, in the classic case of Tmura, what you're really trying to do is find an animal that's less worthy than this animal. You're not trying to find an animal that's more worthy. You're trying to find an animal that's less worthy. The Rambam says that's really the basis of Tmura. Why the Torah asked Tmura? So that's really the distinction. So there's an intentional distinction between Pidyon and Tmura. And therefore, if somebody would use the language of Pidyon by Kedushas Haguf, although it wouldn't activate, he would not be Chayav Malkus. So if somebody would come with an animal B and say, I would like to redeem animal A and put it onto animal B, through the process of pidyon, he won't be over an avera. It won't work. It'll be ineffective. But he won't be over the avera. So the intent is absolutely critical to the issue of tomorrow. It's not just the facts. Again, granted that usually it's a factual distinction. So the Gemara asks like this. Hagufa kashya. The Mishnah seems to send us conflicting signals. Because the word hakoil, generally speaking, is something which the Torah, which is l'chatchila. Sometimes it even reflects an obligation. So the Gemara says, first you said amrit hakol memirin, which would give us the conclusion that it's l'chatchila. The imam is allowed to do it l'chatchila. V'hoder toni, lo isha adam rashay l'hamir, Elo shem hamir mumar, which means it's only d'evet. It's only b'di'evet. So first we're going on the language of our Mishnah, forgetting what the halacha is. The language in our Mishnah seems to be faulty, because the Mishnah is sending us a contradictory message. Then the Gemara says, afilu timsa loymer, that we would say that the words hakol memirim means l'chatchila. And we wouldn't have had the faulty communication of Mishnah. Let's say Mishnah would have ended over there. Hakol memirim, echad anoshim, echad anoshim. We'd still have a problem. That message can't be. Adakashiloch mimasnita. You're asking from the Seifa on the Reisha. You're asking that the end of the Mishnah is a contradiction with the Reisha of the Mishnah. The Mishnah itself is a contradiction with the Pasuk. Dikshiloch kro. The Torah says that Tmur is an Avera. Dikshiv lo yachlifenu v'lo yomavaisa. Elom Rav Yehuda is explaining as follows. Now this is critical to understand this distinction. The Gemara is not really being choizer from the fact that the word hakoil normally means l'chatchila. You would not normally say the word hakoil if you're trying to talk about an iser. You wouldn't say, if you're talking about a kohen being mekadesh grusha, you wouldn't say kol hakohanim mekadeshim grushas, and then say that it works. But the Gemara basically is saying here that the word hakoil has a dual interpretation. The dual interpretation is, it's clearly strengthening whatever din we're talking about. So if we're talking about, let's say, Kriyas Megillah, Hakol Chayav Mekriyas Megillah, it's strengthening that obligation. If we're talking about something which is a heter, it's strengthening that, saying it's l'chatchila to do it. It's always strengthening whatever din we're talking about. In our case, it is also strengthening the din of Tmura. But it's not strengthening it from a heter aspect, it's strengthening it from a chalois aspect. That's what the Gemara's answer is. Says the Gemara, this is the pshat in the Mishnah, Hochi Ketoni. Hakol matfisin betmura. The reason why we use the language hakol is to stress the fact that the tmura works, that it does activate. Echad anoshim vechad noshim, v'loy shodam rashay lohomir, el shem heimir mumir v'soyf v'gezhar boy. It's not coming to tell you that that's l'chatchila, obviously, but that you're seifig arboim. So again, the reason why the Mishnah used this language was to strengthen the din, but not to strengthen the din in a way to tell you that you're allowed to do it, but rather to strengthen it from a different angle, to tell you the strength of the chalois, that the chalois is takachal. So we're going to get back to this shakl of attire because it's actually critical to the whole sugya that's coming on. The Gemara says like this. Hakol asuye mai. Even though we just finished explaining that hakol tells you that something is either l'chatchil or that it's chal, the fact is that we could have used the sefer the Mishnah, we also would have known that. We also would have known that it's chal. So we don't need the hakol. It's grammatically correct to use the word hakol when you're talking about something which is chal. But it's not needed for that, because Lamaisa, the Sefer tells us that the Tmur is Chal. So it must be that the Hakol is coming to be Marba something. Now again, if it's coming to be Marba something, what was our question to begin with? It's very simple. Even when you want to be Marba something, you can't send a signal which is not correct. So while you're being Marba something, you can't tell me it's L'chatchila Mutter if it's not L'chatchila Mutter. So these are two different things that the Gemara is talking about. First, the Gemara is dealing with the fact whether the word Hakol is grammatically correct. Since the din of tmura is something which is usur, so grammatically speaking, can the word hakoil absorb something which is usur? That we said yes, it can. But now we still don't need it for that. We the diktuk of it is okay. We don't need it. That's the Gemara's question. Says the Gemara, what's it coming to be marba? Says the Gemara, lasuya yorish. It's coming to be marba yorish. Now this is going to open up a whole can of worms, a yorish. Because the normal yorish that we talk about in Shas is when you have yorishim that inherit an estate, they inherit something. A korban is not dafka something that you could inherit. It's very possible that a korban is not even on an estate list as something that you could actually own. So that's something that's the problem that we're going to have in this Gemara. But the Gemara says it's coming to include a yorish. That a Yerush can do Tmura. Okay? The Gemara says, what's the case of Yerush? The case of Yerush is where he Yarshened a behemoth from his father, which according to some Tanoim, you would not be able to do Tmura. And that is Rabbi Yehuda. So our Mishnah is coming to say that you could. The like Rabbi Yehuda, that non-Yerush Soymech Yerush Meimir, Div Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that a Yerush has the ability to do Smicha. He has the ability to do Tmura. We'll see whether he's obligated to do smicha. Rav Yehuda Omer Yorish Einu Soimich. Yorish cannot do smicha. Yorish Einu Meim. And our Mishnah is really trying to be marbe that you could do tomorrow, that it is chal. Says the Gemara. I time it, Rav Yehuda. What's Rav Yehuda's reason that he holds it does not work? He holds that smicha and tomorrow go together. Yolif Tchilas Hekdish Misayfek. He holds, Tchilas Hekdish is learned from Seif Hekdish. We'll see what Tchilas Hekdish, Seif Hekdish means. Simply reading the Gemara, if we take the Girsa the way it is, not the way Rashi brings down the Girsa, it means that we're learning Tchilas Hekdish. The Tmura is called the Tchilas Hekdish, The Seif Hekdesh is called Smicha. We're learning just like Ma Seif Hekdesh Yorish and Yisaymech. Just like after something is already a carbon, and it's already in the process of being brought, the Yorish can't do Smicha. Avtchilus Hekdesh, which is Tmura, which is when you're trying to put the Kedusha on the Behema, Yorish and Yimeimer, Yorish can't do Tmura. Says the, but clearly, if you read the Gemara the way it's in front of us, without a pasuk, we would clearly say Yorish could do tomorrow. Because we need a pasuk to say he can't. Rav Yehuda is learning out from Smicha that a Yorish can't do tomorrow. That means Rav Yehuda holds the outside logic would be that a Yorish can do tomorrow. He needs a pasuk. In this point alone, there's an open contradiction in the sugya, because if you just go down to the next sugya, which is a hemshech of this sugya, the Gemara goes the other way. For Rav Meir, Dama Yorish Meimer, my time. What kind of question is that? Here you spent the whole Shakla V'Tarya to know where Rav Yehuda learned that a Yorish can't do Tmura. That means you're telling me the outside logic is that he can. So Rav Meir is Poshet. Rav Meir, who subsidizes Rav Yehuda's Droshes, that Tmura doesn't work by a Yorish, he does no problem. He goes back to your outside logic. However your outside logic was to understand Rav Yehuda. Outside, you asked him Rav Yehuda. He said, what's going on, Rav Yehuda? Where did he get this that the Yorish can't do tomorrow? You had to find a pasuk for Rav Yehuda. So Rav Meir is fine. He's going whatever svara you had when you said, why does Rav Yehuda hold the Yorish can't do tomorrow? So this is like an open blade, which you have many times in Shas, this kind of a situation. And there's always a pshat, obviously. But you see clearly that at this point in the Gemara anyway, the svara chitzoyin of the Gemara is that it should work. That a Yorish should have the power to do Tmura. That's the svara the Gemara is going. The Gemara says, Ma soif hekdesh Yorish eino seimich, avtchilus hekdesh Yorish eino meimich. Usmicha gufa minola. How do we know that smicha doesn't work? Says the Gemara, smicha, we also have a svara. We have a pasuk. What's the smicha? There are three times the Torah uses the terminology korbonoi instead of korban. To last korbonoi ksivi. Chad korbonoi v'loi korbonoi v'kechavim. One is excluding a goy. One, v'chad korbonoi, one time that it says korbonoi, it's loi korban chaveroi. V'chad korbonoi v'loi korban oviv. So we have three korbonois, and each korban is excluding another situation. Okay, so again, so that's reviewed in Rav Meir. Rav Meir holds he can. Rav Meir holds Yorish Soimach. I, it says, ksiv korbonoi. Hahumi boy leila rabo is kol bale choivrin l'smicha. Kol bale choivrin l'smicha, if you have many people that belong to a korban, just like we use the word chabura by a korban pesach, if you have a bunch of people that own a korban together, they all have to do smicha. Each one of the group has to do smicha. Now, what would you say without the pasuk? So, two ways to look at it. One way is you'd say nobody has to do smicha. And one way is you could say one person would do smicha on behalf of everybody. And there is a contradiction in the Rishonim as to what we would say, and we'll see what the logic behind that is. Says the Gemara, for Rav Yehuda, how does he know this idea? The Gemara says, no, he holds Baalei Choivrin L'smicha. He holds you don't need it, Leslie. You don't need, the people in the Chabura don't have to do smicha. What does it mean they don't have to do smicha? So Rashi here implies nobody has to do smicha. Since there is no individual owner, nobody has to do smicha. Rashi Menachas Tav Tzadi Aleph is of the opinion that one has to do smicha for everybody. So there's actually a Shita Mekubetzes in Erechin that answers this contradiction in Rashi. This contradiction is also asked by Rav Eliashiv in his Sefer here in Temura. He asked this contradiction in Rashi, and we'll get to how to understand it. Says the Gemara, my time, what's the reason why he does not hold of the concept that everybody has to do smicha? Doesn't belong to each one individual as their individual carbon. So it's like a corporate carbon, and therefore it doesn't require individualized smicha. Because a carbona implies only if it's your specific carbon. Maybe, perhaps, he holds that they do all have to do smicha. In which case, carbona is used. The carbon of the kechavim, the carbon chaveri, michad kronavka. You can learn out of one pasuk the fact that a goy's korban doesn't have smicha, and that your korban chaveri doesn't have smicha. Why is that? What's the svara? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, the mashma korbonoi v'loy shliach. And not a shliach. Bein shel Yisrael, bein shel Evik Echovim. Meaning, the way Rashi is explaining, there was never a havamina that a goy would do smicha. Because the parasha smicha wasn't given to goy. It says bnei Yisrael. The only reason why I need any kind of exclusion that a goy doesn't do smicha is that we wouldn't do it on his behalf. We wouldn't do on his korban. He clearly doesn't need smicha because he's out of the parasha. The parasha is bnei Yisrael. So Rashi explains you don't need a pasuk to say that a goy doesn't do smicha. So the whole havamina would be that we do it on the goy's behemah. Rav Yehuda therefore explains that, logically speaking, I don't need a pasuk to say that you don't do smicha on korban chaveray, because I already know that from a goy. Now it's obvious that this is very hard to understand. First of all, there's clearly a very obvious distinction between a goy's korban and a Jew's korban. A goy, there's no parasha of shlichus. A goy, there's no parasha of shlichus. So there we could say it's logical that the Torah said that if he can't do smicha, you can't do smicha for him. That's logical. A Jew, on the other hand, could be, I could do b'torah shliach. The fact that there's no Torah shliach by a goy doesn't tell me that there's no Torah shliach by a Jew. So the whole concept is difficult. The concept that we make this analogy, it's one pasuk, and that's how Rashi explains it. Simple. Now, what Rashi seems to be saying is that the whole havamina would be that you do smicha for the goy. Now, if you look at Tosfos, he says the same thing. Take a look at the small Tosfos here. Korbonei v'loi korbonei v'kechov. Tosfos says, v'im toimar, l'may yitzrich korbonei. Why do I need the pasuk of korbonei l'hocha? Ha'nafka shapir m'bnei Yisrael saimchim v'enei v'kechovim saimchim. I already know there's no smicha, because I know that a goy doesn't do smicha. So what do I need to psukim? So what Rashi is absorbing in the Gemara, Mechad Kronavka, Tosfos is asking as a question. Tosfos says, v'yesh loimar de itztrich. D'mau d'teimo einoi v'kechovim atzmo yisoy mechal korbonai. I understand that because of the parasha smicha was only given to Jews, the goy doesn't do smicha. But, miyu ha-kohanim soimchim aleihem. But the kohen would still do smicha on the goy's korban. Hav amina. Mishum hachi yitzrich korbonai loma shein korban evikachom smicha klal. That's how Tosfos understands it. So Tosfos is saying you need two psukim, and one pasuk is needed to tell you that the goy doesn't need to do smicha, and another pasuk is needed to say that we don't do smicha on the goy's korban. That's how Tosfos sees it. Now obviously, the analogy to a yid, to doing smicha on another yid's korban, is a whole new chiddush. Because a Jew is a din of shlichus. So we have to understand what the Gemara means when the Gemara says, according to Rav Yehuda, it's one pasuk. It seems obvious that according to Rav Yehuda, when you would be doing smicha for your friend, you wouldn't be doing it as a shlich. There's no havamin you'd be doing it as a shlich. Because if the havamin is you'd be doing it as a shlich, there's no analogy to a goy. It must be, and we'll see why that is, it must be that the Gemara never had a havamina that you're presenting yourself as a shliach. Because if you're presenting yourself as a shliach, then it's obvious that a goy's korban, you can't do it, and a Jew, you can. I'll strengthen this idea. Besides for the fact, as I'm explaining, it doesn't work in Rashi. It has to be that way. Because if we're talking about a shliach, why do I need a pasuk to say that you don't do for a goy's korban? When we already know in Kiddush and Daf Mem Aleph, we learn out that there's no shlichus to a goy. We learn out of the pasuk of Atem Gamatem, Ma'atem Bnei Bris, Av Shulchacham Bnei Bris. So we know that there's no shlichus by a goy. So clearly, when Tosfos says that we would be doing it on a goy's korban, we wouldn't be doing it as a shliach for him. It would be using some other type of concept. And that being the case, that's what Rashi means, that by a Jew it will be the same way. Just like it doesn't work for a goy, whatever that other concept is, it also doesn't work by a goy. That's clearly how to learn the sugya. Now, Rav Yashiv comes in his sefer on Tmura here, and he asks a question which many of the Achronim ask on Tosfos. He tries to give a solution, which we'll see if we can work with that. But he asks a question which many ask here, which is that, according to Tosfos, How do we know at the end of the day that we don't do smicha on a woman's carpet? Tosfos seems to be saying that every smicha needs a double whammy if you want to get it out of the parasha smicha. You need one pasuk to say that the individual that's bringing the carbon doesn't do smicha. And then you need another pasuk to tell you that we don't do on his behalf. So then why, by a woman's carbon, all over Shas, we say woman's carbon doesn't need smicha. How do you know? There's only one pasuk. So say that the woman doesn't do smicha, but we do smicha on her behalf. This is what Rav Eliashiv asks. It's not, again, it's a famous question. And he asks a question, he says, he says, so for a woman, you should also need two. So he has a very interesting teretz he wants to give. Very interesting answer. He wants to say that really there's a different question here. We just had in the daf, those of you that are doing the daf, a whole discussion the last couple of days, when a kohen does avoid in the Beis HaMikdash, who's he representing? Is he representing the Yisrael, who's bringing the carbon? Is he representing the Rachmona, the Rabbanu Shalel? And this is found throughout Shas. We had it in the Dorm also. If you're Mudra Anor, could the kohen bring your carbon? If he's representing you, he can't bring your carbon. If he's representing Shamayim, could bring your carbon. So the Haflor and the Pnei Yeshua, they all ask, let the Gemara bring a simple raya from Goy. A Goy could bring a korban. There's no shlichas by a Goy. So how could a Goy bring a korban? There's absolutely no shlichas by a Goy. It must be that the Kohen is not representing the Bala korban. He's representing Shamayim. Like Gevaldik Akasha. So the Ponim Iris in his Tshuvas answers this question. He says, a goy's carbon is different, he says, because a goy has no shaychus to his carbon. This is the lashon of the b'korban akum ein ha-korban misyachus alav klal. He says, by a goy, the carbon has no connection to him at all. He's bringing it, but he's not connected. It's not like a yid that has a mitzvah to bring a carbon, and when the yid brings a carbon, he's connected to it. The goy brings a carbon, he's in isolation. So it's almost like a unidentified carbon. It's like an unidentified carbon. Who is this carbon connected to? It's unidentified. Now, its genetic makeup is identified. It's an oiler. A goy can only bring a carbon oiler. But as far as the bilum of the carbon, it's ayolah shlucha. It has no idea. So mamela over there says that that's why over there the kohen is not his shlich. It explains why the Gemara has a discussion that maybe by every carbon the kohen is representing the Yisrael. We have a question by a goy. He's clearly not. The answer is because the goy is not part of the carbon. He's not connected to it anyway. And since he's not connected to it in the process of the avodah, the kohen is not representing it. So he says, if that's the case, he says, so dafka by a goy, would you think that we would do smicha for the goy? Because we're not really doing it for him, we're doing it for us. He's not part, he's out of the picture. He's out of the picture. So even though the goy's carbon, the goy doesn't do smicha, but that wouldn't stop us from doing smicha, because he's not connected to the carbon anyway. He's like on the outside. Whereas the woman is very much part of the parasha. He says, if that's the case, he says, dafka ba'akum deina korban misyachas olav. Carbon has no connection to the goy. He says, so there we have a havamina mashenkin korban noshim. Ain't sad that somebody else should do it for them. Meaning, smicha is something that you do, which I think somebody here was saying, korbonai, right? Smicha is something the Bala Korban does. The only reason why Tosfos presents a possibility, and Rashi, that we would do for the goy is only because there really is no goy. We're not doing it for the goy. We have a korban here that's nebuch of a lawyer in the soul. It's a yosem. The korban of a goy is like an orphan. It doesn't have any Bala Korban. So now we're avi yosemim. We come in and we do smicha on the korban. That's what you would think. Kamash one that we don't do it. That's the way Rav Eliashiv is trying to explain this. So Rav Eliashiv himself asks on his own pshat. He says, if I'm right, then that whole idea of learning the goy and the Jew from one pasuk, it doesn't work. The Gemara says that Korban Chaveroi and the Korban Goy is learned out of one pasuk. What do you mean? It's two different things. So again, we have this problem, like I said. On the one hand, we have this obvious gaping difference between a Goy's Korban and a Jew's Korban. On the other hand, we find that the Rishonim connect them. The Gemara connects it. The Gemara says that according to Rav Yehuda, you could learn them from one thing. So this same problem that I'm presenting over here, Rav Eliashiv is presenting on his answer to try to make sense of why Isha doesn't need a carbon. Now, Rav Eliashiv's question from Isha, I think there's a different way to answer that question. And that, I think, can be explained in a simple way, which is that there's a big difference, even if we'll say a goy is part of his carbon. Because definitely the haflos is a very big chiddush. There's a pasuk that says, ish, l'rabbas oivdei kechovim, shenoidrim nadorim unadovus ki Yisrael. So, you know, it's a very strong statement that the Haflah is making, the Panamiris is making, that it's obvious the Pnei Yeshua didn't agree with it, that a goy, when a goy brings a carbon, he has no connection to it. The Torah says, shenoidrim nadorim nadovus ki Yisrael. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to be logical to say that a goy is not connected to his carbon. He is connected to his carbon. That's number one. The whole idea that we find a goy can only bring an oila. Why can a goy only bring an oila? Because akum liba l'shamayim. A goy cannot connect to the concept that a korban is eaten. Okay? Now, if the Panim Meiris is right, that once the goy brings a korban, right? Once the goy brings a korban, he's out of the parasha. What's the problem? Bring any korban. It's not his korban anyway. The goy is nothing more than a delivery man. It's like the goy is coming, delivering cattle to the Beis HaMikdash. He's a cattle, okay? He's delivering cattle. But the fact that we see that there are certain approaches, how we treat a goy's carbon, how we treat a Jew's carbon, seems to show that the carbon of the goy is associated to the goy. But I think that there's a different dray here, different way to explain it. And that is, in general, when we talk about a woman in a mitzvah that she's potter from, it's not so simple to say that a woman is exempt from that mitzvah. We talk about mitzvah asei shazman chomer. That's a classic example. Smicha is one of the analogies the Rishonim make to a mitzvah asei shazman chomer. Right? So when a woman is potter from a mitzvah, does that mean that she doesn't have the mitzvah? Mitzvah's lulav. She doesn't have the mitzvah. It's not her mitzvah. Or is it just that there's no obligation to do that mitzvah? She's not obligated. She has the mitzvah. She has the mitzvah. By an ish, the man is mechuyev to do the mitzvah. And by an isha, she does not have to do the mitzvah. But she actually can. It happens to be that the most logical way to explain that a woman can make a bracha on a mitzvah asei shazman groma, which is the way we paskin. The Rambam holds a woman doesn't make a bracha on a mitzvah asei shazman groma. But we paskin, a woman can make a bracha on a mitzvah asei shazman groma. The most logical way to explain that is to say that a woman really has the mitzvah. That's why she can make a brocha, because she does have the mitzvah. She just doesn't have to do it. But the Rebbeinu Shem gave her the mitzvah. And this is not my imagination. This is a balamoyer in Rosh Hashanah. The balamoyer uses this to explain why a woman makes a brocha. He says the kol haTorah kula, the entire Torah, was given to a woman, as well as a man, he says, including mitzvah asei shazman groma. He says, but mitzvah asei shazman groma, he calls it a very interesting lashon. He says, for a woman, it's a reshus to mitzvah. It's a reshus to do the mitzvah. And for a man, it's a choiva to do the mitzvah. Which means when a woman picks up a lulav on sukkahs, according to the Baal HaMor, it's not all that different than when you pick up a lulav on sukkahs. Just you are absolutely obligated to do it. She doesn't have to do it. But when she is picking up that lulav, she's being mekayim the mitzvah l'kachtem l'chem. And therefore she can make a bracha. She's thanking Hashem for this mitzvah that she received, just like you received it. Very posh. Now, according to the Baal HaMor, that would explain why some Rishonim hold a woman is allowed to do smicha. It's machloikas. For woman, nosham samchas. Some older woman could even do smicha, even though smicha is much worse than taking a lulav. Because smicha has a downside. You're leaning on a behemah of kutshim. Normally, you're not allowed to take an animal of kutshim and lean on it. That would be called using the animal. That would be me'ila, right? Obviously, when you're doing it for smicha, you're allowed to do it. There is an opinion that holds that a woman is allowed to do smicha on a carbon, even though she's potter. Why? Because she's getting the mitzvah of smicha. So that being the case, it's not difficult to say that this side of the Gemara, that a woman would not need a pasuk to say that we don't do smicha for her, is very simple. Because smicha is her mitzvah. By the goy, where he's exempt from smicha, so smicha has nothing to do with him. So now we come in, and we are zoicha in the mitzvah of smicha. This is us coming in here. By a woman, smicha wasn't taken away, it's a ptur. She has smicha, the whole Torah was given to her too. So we can't come in now and say, okay, we're doing it. Who are we? That's included in the din, that lo yodav lo yad chaveri. By smicha, we never have another person do smicha for you. So by a woman, it's the same thing. A woman, it has not been taken away from her enough that we could come in and say, we're doing it for her. What do you mean doing it for me? It's my mitzvah. The guy can't say, it's my mitzvah. We tell him, 1 second, read the first words in the parasha. Dabel b'nei Yisrael. It's nothing to do with you, smicha. We're coming in, we're chopping a mitzvah. It's hashavas aveda. We're chopping a mitzvah. That's lost. That's, I think, would be the simple way to explain the distinction between an isha and a guy. So really, all of these issues that we're raising here in Pshat and the Gemara really forces us to analyze the first question which we asked, which was, what is the status of a Yorish on a carbon? What is the status? Does a Yorish really own the when a parent dies or a relative dies, and the Yorish inherits the carbon? Is that really an inheritance? Does he own the carbon? Like the rest of the estate, whatever else he yarish. Or can we say that a yarish really, there's no yerush on a carbon? The Mishnah says, now we have conflicting messages in different sugyas hashas, but the Mishnah says in Pesachim Daf Tzadi Ches, that if a person dies and he leaves over a carbon pesach, his son cannot bring the carbon pesach for him. Lo yevienu b'noi ta'achrav. So the Tosfos written that Gemara says, a very simple pshat. He says, the reason why you can't is because there's no Yerusha. There's no Yerusha. He says, you don't yarish in it. It's not your karma. He says, the karma pesach doesn't belong to you. Very simple explanation. Every karma pesach, you need to have ownership on the karma pesach. There's no ownership. He says, because there is no Yerusha by karbonis. So what does he mean? Obviously, I mean, Shas, our Gemara, and Shas is full of Yerush by Karbonas. Can a Yerush do Tamur? Can a Yerush not do Tamur? Can a Yerush bring a Karbon? It's all over. So what does he even mean? He obviously means that monetarily speaking, the Yerush doesn't own the Karbon. He obviously has some connection to the Karbon, but he doesn't have enough of a connection to say that it's his Karbon. So really, the Yerush is not really a Yerush. So if he's not really a Yerush, we have to know, why does our Gemara take on an assumption that a Yerush should be able to do Tamura? Why in the world would I think a Yerush could do Tamura? That I would need my... the conclusion is that our Mishnah actually holds that a Yerush could do Tamura. But why would you even think that a Yerush could do Tamura? The Gemara asks on Rabbi Yehuda, why not? My question is, why yes? Why in the world would you think that a Yerush could do tomorrow? If he doesn't own, it's not a monetary thing, it's not his. I don't even know what his shaychus is. According to the Tosfos Rid, what shaychus does the Yerush even have with the carbon? Clearly has a connection to the carbon. Clearly, the sugya in Zvachim that I asked you to look up, that Gemara clearly states that he even has a kapara from the carbon. The Gemara calls it a kapara mikufya, that he has some kind of, light kapara. Kufya means it's not an inherent kapara, it's a light kapara, but he has some kind of kapara. The Gemara even has a shaila that maybe after he dies, the owner A and the Yerush yarshens the carbon, and now the kohen brings the carbon, shaloi l'shem bailim, it's possible. That was the Gemara I asked you to look up on Daf Zayin Amud Beis in Zevachim, where the Gemara says clearly that if Reuven dies, he leaves over a carbon, his son Shimon yarshens the carbon. According to one opinion in the Gemara, if Shimon himself brings the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, the Yerush, and the Kohen does not have Shimon in mind, it's shaloi lishma. And if it will be possible, it depends on the type of carbon it is. It's shaloi lishma. So you see clearly from that side of the Gemara that absolutely you do yarshin. Okay? So very simplistically speaking, which never works. Whenever something is simplistic, it's not usually pshat in the Gemara. But in a simplistic way, you could say, maybe that's the tzedakim here. If you hold that a Yerush inherits the carbon taka, there is some kind of monetary inheritance, then he could do tmura and he could do smicha, then he's a mechutin. And if the Yerush does not inherit the carbon, then he can't do smicha. Maybe these different contradictions that we have are actually two different opinions. The Gemara in Zvachim brings down two opinions. One opinion says that after death, there is no din of Shini Baila. That if Reuven dies and Shimon brings the carbon, and the Kohen does not have Shimon in mind, it's not a problem. So maybe actually these are categories. Either you hold that a Yerush is monetarily connected to the carbon. If he's monetarily connected to the carbon, then there's a din of tmura, and there's a din of smicha, and there's a din of shini bailim, will be very nicely wrapped. And or you hold, like the Tosfos is written in Psachim, that a Yerush does not inherit the carbon. And therefore, he can't do smicha, he can't do tamura, there is no shini bailam, and everything is great. The problem is, A, there's stam mishnas flying around here. You know, the mishnah that the Tosfos Rid is talking about in Psachim, that's a stam mishnah. It's not like somebody can argue with that mishnah. The mishnah says that somebody who dies, the son cannot bring the carbon pesach. It's not a machloikas amaroyim, it's a stam mishnah. And on that Mishnah, the Tosfos Rid says, is because there's no Yerusha on a carbon. So you can't say, well, that statement is totally in a machloikas amaroyim. That statement in the context that it's said in is a context of a Stam Mishnah. And I also asked you to look up the Rambam, because the Rambam forces us to say that that's not the case. The Rambam here, in Halacha Test, that I'm sure the most of you got a chance to look up, the Rambam says, Shochta l'shem meis k'shego v'loy ola l'baylam. She'ein kapora l'meisim. Shochta l'shem mi she'ein imuchuyev b'korban klal harezu p'sula. But he says clearly, shochta l'shem meis k'shego. It's kosher. Even though, that means the Rambam is paskening, that we don't look at the Yerush as the owner of the carbon. We don't connect the carbon to the Yerush. So if our logic is correct, that everything here is a category. Either you hold that the Yerush yarshins the carbon, and then we shech the carbon for him, he's allowed to do tmura, he does smicha, everything is his. Okay? Then, simply, the Rambam has to take sides now. He has to either say, I hold the Yerush yarshins the carbon, and then he's joining that party, or the Rambam has to align himself with the party that says he doesn't yarshin. The Rambam paskins like our Mishnah that a Yerush could do tmura, and he still says that when a guy dies, you don't have to bring the carbon for him, for the Yerush. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what we're saying. No, but if everybody knows that if somebody in the street walks over to somebody's carbon, it doesn't work. Okay, so now what's the machlokes then? So you're just saying we don't know what the machlokes is. That's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with you, Sammy. I'm saying we obviously don't know what the machlokes is. Whether a Yerush could do tmura or cannot do tmura is not hinged on this machlokes. And you're saying that's the way you understand it, which is exactly what we're saying. What I'm basically saying is that we have a sugi here that says a question whether a Yerush could do tmura or cannot do tmura. We were attempting to say, well, maybe it's a simple explanation. The one who says you could do tmura holds you inherit the carbon. And the one who says you can't do tmura holds you don't inherit the carbon. And that would be simple. That was saying cannot be the case. So you're agreeing. You're saying we have to search, we have to find some other explanation. But that's clearly not the explanation. So the shaila is, what is behind this machlekes? So there are other sugyas which also send us conflicting messages about a yorish. One of them is a nazir. In nazir, the Gemara has a discussion, if a father dies, if we bring, sometimes the son brings the korbanos of the father. So some of you may recall from the Daf Yomi in nazir, somebody dies, he leaves over korbanos of nazirus. There are certain examples where the son attaches himself to those korbanos that the father would have brought. So the Gemara says, there's a rule by a chatas, that by a chatas we don't say that the yorish, that anybody, forget the yorish, nobody brings a chatas after the owner dies. After the owner dies, chatas shemesu ba'aleha goes to misa. So the Gemara says here in Nazir, Daf Chav Zayin. The Gemara says that if the father separated a korban, you can't. The son does not bring the korban chatas. So Tosfos says, of course, how could the son bring korban chatas? The avadai chatas shemesu ba'alel l'misa azla. Tosfos says, what's going on here? The father was a nazir, separated a korban chatas. He died. We have a rule. One of the most basic rules in kutchim is that a chatas that the owner died goes to misa. Because a chatas can only be brought for the one that separated it. And if he's not here, it goes l'misa. So what is the Gemara even analyzing? What do we do with a father who dies and he leaves over a korban chatas for his naziris? That's Taisa's question. So the Shita Mekubetza says a very interesting statement here. The Shita Mekubetza says here on this Gemara, that's not a question. Because maybe when there's a son here, we don't look at it like it's Mesu Balel. New idea. Maybe since there's a son, we don't look at it like the father died. What does that even mean? But that's the terminology that's being thrown out. That it could be, it's not Mesu Balel. I think actually this is the key to really understand our whole Gemara. These words of the Shita. That Yorish is different than all other cases that we have. Where chata shemesu ba'alecha. There's a similar Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara says in Erevin that normally the halacha is that if a problem occurs on Shabbos with an Erev, I'm not talking about an Erev, a Tzuras HaPesach Erev, I'm talking about an Erev where people chip in and try to unite through a pas, right? Through in chipping in for a piece of bread and everybody becomes one mishpocha. So there's a problem if on Shabbos the status changes, we have a problem. So the only way to get around that problem is for the owner to be mevatel his rishus. The owner could say, okay, I'm out of the picture. If we have a problem with one individual, he has the ability on Shabbos to say, I'm being mevatel rishus. It's the only thing you can really do on Shabbos. You can't make an Erev on Shabbos because the Erev always goes to Bein HaShemoshes of before Shabbos. So the only solution you have on Shabbos is to make a bittel. Okay? The Gemara has a shaila, what happens nebuch if the guy that we have a problem with dies on Shabbos? So now we're left with a yorish. The problem we have with the yorish is the yorish is a new guy in town. The new guy in town can't rectify a problem from the beginning of Shabbos that we had with the old guy. So we have a problem. The Gemara says, maybe it's a problem. Then the Gemara says, hey, Dilma. The Gemara says, the yorish is karadavu. He's his father, which is the same idea. Somehow, we don't look at it like the father's out of the picture. The son's here. It's good enough. The son's here. That gives us the leeway to say that nobody died. That's the Gemara. So again, we see that concept used. And this is something we find in Bava Basra as well, where the Gemara discusses the possibility. Later on, we'll see that the Gemara discusses when you have a chatos of a tzibur, that one of the tzibur dies, we don't say that it goes l'misa. Because we say that the children are in the place of the father. Parents, the children are in the place of, same type of idea. So what I think lies in this sugya is a simple idea. And that is, whenever we talk about Yerusha, clearly Yerusha is a monetary thing. When we use it in Shas, we talk about it as a monetary thing. It's clearly monetary. The question is Yerusha only monetary? Or is Yerusha some other concept? The conclusion is monetary. The conclusion is that there are monetary ramifications, but it's not dafka monetary. And I will tell you that there are clear ayahs to this shaila. It's not just a luft shaila. It's a real shaila. First of all, the Rishonim go in great detail in Yesh Noichlim and in other places in Shas and Kedushin to qualify that the husband yarshins his wife differently than regular Yerusha. When a son yarshins a parent, a brother yarshins a sibling, that's one type of Yerusha. And then the Rishonim say, but a husband and a wife, that's a different type, that's like a monetary Yerusha. That's almost like he acquires his wife. One of the monetary benefits is that he gets Yerusha. And there are actually differences in halacha for that reason. For instance, a relative who yarshins another relative because of their relativity, because of their closeness, can even yarshin that relative after they die. Meaning, Reuven dies, and then Shimon dies. Reuven could yarshin his brother Shimon, even though Reuven is dead. He could yarshin his brother and give it to his offspring before some other living relative that's more distant gets it. That's called mishmash. That's more complicated than yevamos, that type of sugya. But that's mishmash. And mishmash basically means that there's Yerusha even after the guy's not here. Which, by the way, also proves that it can't strictly be monetary. Because a dead man cannot own anything monetarily. That's one of the deficiencies of people that are dead. In halach and chayshin mishpat, they can't own anything. So obviously, when we talk about all these dead guys yarshining, and sometimes it's a ganze, it's a whole mishpach of dead people that have a tchias ha-meisim by Yerusha. All of a sudden, we talk about them like they're here, Reuven and him, and he's giving it to him. Who's he? He's been gone for 100 years. He's busy giving out nechassim. So that also proves that it's not just modern. But not only is this is like a soft raya. There are concrete rayas. For instance, in Choshen Mishpat, in Simen Reish Ayin Vav, in Hilchas Yerusha, there's a halacha that a davar she'ein bei mamish, something which is not tangible, normally you can't have ownership to it. Monetarily. You can't own something that's not tangible. Let's say a right. Right? So it doesn't go over Yerusha. But the Shulchan Aruch says that if the Yerush happens to be holding it at the time of death, right, then the Yerush keeps it. Because, the Shach explains, Yerusha is because he's a continuation of the dead person. Same type of idea. He doesn't have to get a transfer. Even something which inherently is not transferable, I could get using Yerusha. So again, you see that concept. Moshe Rabbeinu asking that his leadership should be Yarshan to his children. That's not a monetary concept. I can't sell you a position. A Rabbonus. I can't sell a Rabbonus. I could sell you if a Rebbe has a shtibel, he could sell his house. But if a guy's a dayan, he can't sell his dayanus to somebody. Not shayach. If he's selling his dayanus, he's not a good dayan. Right? So it doesn't work, but Yerusha does. Conceptually, by Yerusha, Moshe Rabbeinu asked, Parshas Pinchas, my son should yarish in my position. Same type of idea. The idea here is very simple. The idea is that Avada, Yerusha has monetary to it. Of course, definitely. There's a monetary conclusion. But the reason why Yerusha has a monetary conclusion is because the relative is considered a hemshech of that individual. What the Torah said was, we recognize that this individual, that Reuven, is now being represented by his son Shimon, by his brother Levi. These people are his extensions. And therefore, they have benefits, there's halachas of Yibum, there's a lot of different halachas. There's kuhuna, there's levia, there's all kinds of fine zachen. There's also money. There's money. Listen, if you're representing him, so in a sense, his money goes to you because it's really another way of it going to him. It's another way of it staying by him, is if it goes to you. That's what Yerusha is. Now really, when you go through the Gemara in Bava Basra, it's almost black and white in the Gemara. The Gemara has a discussion, who comes first, the son or the brother of the mace? It seems obvious the son is a closer relative. The Gemara says, 1 second. The brother is a closer relative because he's come tacht of b'yibum. He represents his brother by Yibum. If the brother dies, he continues his legacy. The Gemara says, no. The son is come tachas oviv, b'yid. The whole Gemara, the whole structure of the Gemara is who is closer in representing that person. Who do we find is representing that person? And therefore, the money goes to them. Now, what the Tosfos Rid is saying is that although you're a Yerush, right, the carbon is not something that's monetary. Even the person that was alive, once they makdish it, now it's an oila. It's not part of their property. They are considered the bala carbon because they were mafrish the carbon. They separated the carbon. That's their connection to the carbon. But Moshe Kachem, it has nothing to do with the bala. There's no monetary connection at all. It doesn't matter. You will makdish the carbon. That's your connection. The Yerush Taka doesn't yashin the carbon, but he represents the person that was alive. And that quasi-connection that he has to the person that was alive, which is enough to give him monetary halachas, may be enough for him to do tumura. Because of that connection that he has. Not because of his monetary ownership to this carbon. And that was the Chazon Ish that I asked you to look up, where you see you don't need actual ownership to do tumura. The Gemara later will talk about, does tumura go by the one who was makdashit? Does tumura go by the one who gets the kapara? But the whole concept of Yerusha is a concept where you have somebody representing the person that was dead. And that's the Shaila. In what areas could they represent them? And what areas could they not represent them? That's the ish, the whole issue of our sugya, is because the person's a Yerush. Now, there are those who want to say this is only a child, but the way we're learning, it's not only a child. It's every Yerusha works that way. Every Yerusha works because the Yerush is really a hemshech, a continuation of that person, and therefore they get the money. And therefore the Gemara says in Erevin, he could be Mevatel Rishus too. Why not? He's here. He's representing that person. He's representing the person that died. So he could maybe be Mevatel Rishus. That explains the Shita Mukobetzes in Nozir that says that if the father died, it's not called a Chata Shemesu Balera. Because the one who's presenting the carbon now is not presenting it as somebody else, he's representing it for that person. Chata Shemesu Balera means a Chatas that died, the owner died, cannot represent anybody else. The Yerush is a Hechatimtsa for it to be brought and could still represent the one that was mafreshit. And that's what the Shita means, that there's a possibility to say it doesn't go. And that, I believe, is it's obvious that we're not going to finish the sugi this week, but I believe that that is the at least the introduction to understand our sugi better, is to understand, to qualify that the Yerusha here, and this, and but the Tosfos Rid in Psachim is a whole different idea. The Tosfos Rid in Psachim is actually discussing why you can't bring for Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is a unique carbon. Korban Pesach, your ownership, your monetary ownership, is absolutely imperative to the carbon. So there, it has to be your meat. It has to be your carbon. You have to be... So there, if you're just a Yerush, that doesn't help you at all. Because being a Yerush is just a conceptual connection. You need a monetary connection. And that's why the Tosfos Rid explains that that would be ineffective. So again, in conclusion, just to understand, our main question here in the sugya was to understand why is the Gemara assuming the possibility of a Yerush to be able to do tumura. Part of that question is that we see that the following Gemara doesn't make that assumption, makes the opposite assumption, because the opinion that holds that a Yerush could do tumura, the Gemara questions that. Why does he hold he could? So there seems to be clearly two different ways to look at it, and we have to understand why that we didn't explain. Why is the Gemara now assuming one way, and Reb Meir, the Gemara assumes the other way? That's a question. We then were analyzing also how much ownership is needed in order for somebody to do these things. We see clearly from the Gemara that you would do smicha on a goy's carbon, that you don't have to be the owner to do these things, you have to have a connection. And we explained that by a woman there's no connection because she's connected to the carbon, we're not. By a goy, because he's isolated from the carbon for smicha, we have a quasi-connection to that carbon. And therefore maybe we could do smicha. When it comes to the question of Yerush, we proved that the monetary concept of Yerush and the reason why he would potentially be able to do smicha or tmura are unrelated. Because we see that even though the Rambam holds that a Yerush doesn't inherit the carbon monetarily, he holds more like the Tosfos Rid, he still feels that a Yerush could do tmura. And therefore our conclusion, as an introduction to the understanding of our Gemara, is that it must be that Yerusha is working differently. Yerusha is not that you are actually getting the money. You're the lucky guy here. Your great aunt died and you're the lucky guy. It's not that. It's that you halachically are a hemshich, are an extension of that individual. That extension gives you certain obligations, certain mitzvahs, chiyuv kfura. There's a lot of things that come with that. And amongst those things, the fact that you're a hemshich of that person, the Torah basically said, listen, this guy's a Yerush. Now, what do you do with the money? And even if you look at the words of the Pasuk doesn't say his son gets the money. The Torah says you should take his inheritance, transfer it to his Yerush. His Yerush is his Yerush. His Yerush is his extension. And the Torah says, what do we do with one's property? We go to one of his extensions. He has an extension called son, he has an extension called daughter, he has an extension called nephew, he has an extension brother, he has extensions. We take the money, and those extensions that represent the mace, it goes to them. And the mele, that connection that this Yerush has, is really what gives him the right, potentially, to do tmura smicha. It also explains why the Gemara in Tzvachim says that although the Yerush can't get a full kapara from the carbon, they can get what we call a quasi. What is this quasi? The quasi is this connection that they have, because they're a Yerush. If Yerush is only monetary, it has nothing to do with kapara. It's not monetary. It's a hamshacha of that individual, and that hamshacha gives you that kapara. Okay, I just want to get any questions. No, because by a regular chatas, there's no option of a son bringing the carbon because he's not mechuy of a carbon. The whole case of Nazir there is a case where there's halacha Moshe Messina that a son who's also a Nazir could bring his father's carbonas. Any other questions? What? No good. It has to be mafresh for this chet. It's not possible to hold this. Okay, I just want to give you Mar Mekremes, although we will post it up. Mitzvah Shem for, should we just post it? Is that the best way for everybody? Okay, so we'll just post it. Okay, have a good week.